Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity of National Review is back today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we also want to let our fine listeners know that we're sponsored today by ZipRecruiter. Right now, Three Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. More on them a little bit later in the podcast. Let's begin with the good martini now, and it all started yesterday late afternoon slash early evening when Sally Yates, not exactly a household name until yesterday, she was the acting Attorney General of the United States since Loretta Lynch is gone and Jeff Sessions has not been confirmed yet. She let it be known that the Justice Department, as long as she is running it, would not enforce and would not defend in court the Trump executive order regarding immigrants and refugees. So part of her statement reads, "My role is different from that of the Office of Legal Counsel, which through administrations of both parties has reviewed executive orders for form and legality before they are issued. OLC's review is limited to the narrow question of whether, in OLC's view, a proposed executive order is lawful on its face and properly drafted. Its review does not take account of statements made by an administration or its surrogates close in time to the issuance of an executive order that may bear on the order's purpose. And importantly, it does not address whether any policy choice embodied in an executive order is wise or just." Later on, she says, "I am responsible for ensuring that the positions we take in court remain consistent with this institution's solemn obligation to always seek justice and stand for what is right. At present, I am not convinced that the defense of the executive order is consistent with these responsibilities, nor am I convinced that the executive order is lawful. Consequently, for as long as I am the acting Attorney General, the Department of Justice will not present arguments in defense of the executive order unless and until I become convinced that it is appropriate to do so." The key phrase there being, "as long as I am the acting Attorney General," which is not long. This is the statement from the White House last night. "Tonight, President Trump relieved Ms. Yates of her duties and subsequently named Dana Bente, U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, to serve as acting Attorney General until Senator Jeff Sessions is finally confirmed by the Senate." And by the way, the first thing Bente did, of course, was to announce that the Justice Department would defend the executive order in court. Jim, the editors of National Review point out that the firing was correct because Ms. Yates had the responsibility to either enforce it or quit. Chuck Schumer, of course, is calling it the Monday Night Massacre because that's what he does. What do you make of it all?
You know, Greg, this is the first time I've seen one person get fired and it's a massacre. Right? I mean, you know, that just – massacre, St. Valentine's Day massacre, right? I mean, you know, we tend to think a large scale. Somebody getting fired for refusing to do their jobs is not really much of a massacre, at least by massacres aren't what they used to be. Used to be, I guess. Yeah, so here's the thing. So I have a couple of beefs with the executive order, but – I'm not sure anything in it is illegal. And the fact that the Department of Justice, Office of Legal Counsel, gave it the thumbs up indicates that it is. And if you're going to say, at one point she says, I believe this violates the law. All right, Madam Attorney General, which one? Kind of a strange omission in that letter that if you're going to assert that something violates the law, she doesn't even go to cite any part of U.S. code or any U.S. law. I don't think you can argue that it's unconstitutional. The Constitution does not apply to people who are not U.S. citizens, but she could have at least tried that one. The fact that she didn't, I think, indicates she recognized that argument would get laughed at and dismissed by most legal scholars. So I don't think you can – so that leaves you the argument about it's constitutional, it's legal, she just doesn't think it's the right thing to do. Now, we have talked about the rights of conscience with the clerk down in Kentucky. We want to minimize the number of times somebody has to do something that they think is morally wrong as part of their job. Greg, do you think everybody in the Obama Justice Department liked the idea of prosecuting marijuana offenses for states that have legalized medical marijuana?
Nope.
Right? I mean, you know, sometimes your job, if you're in law enforcement, if you're a judge, if you are a prosecutor, your job is to enforce the law. And while we do get a little bit of prosecutorial discretion, we do get a certain amount of cops can let you off with a warning instead of a speeding ticket. You got to think about the consequences of this. In this case, this is the acting attorney general saying, yeah, I know the president put out an executive order, but I don't agree with it, so I'm not going to defend it. Well, that's really not your call to make. You can either, you know, you have the option of resigning, or you can, you know, salute, swallow your pride and say, all right, I'm going to go along with it because this is, you know, part of the job. She chose not to do that. So Trump was completely within his rights to make this firing. I realize, I'm sure right now the Democratic National Committee is thinking about where can they run her for office. I'm sure she's going to turn into a folk hero
right.
within 24 hours. We're familiar with this phenomenon, and it's going to be very interesting to watch the fights between the new Trump administration and the permanent bureaucracy of Washington. That National Review editorial also pointed out, if you're Trump and you want to enact a what you know is going to be a big, consequential, controversial decision like this, maybe you wait until your guy is the Attorney General.
I think that's probably a good plan. From conservatives, of course, we're looking at this from a number of different ways. The policy itself, the execution of the policy, all the reaction to it. And what none of us was wondering over the weekend was, I wonder what President Obama would have to say about this. As we shift to our bad martini. Jim, it's still January. George W. Bush successfully went 8 years without saying anything about Obama. Obama can't even make it 2 weeks. President Obama is heartened by the level of engagement taking place in communities around the country. In his final official speech as president, he spoke about the important role of citizen and how all Americans have a responsibility to be the guardians of our democracy, not just during an election, but every day. Citizens exercising their constitutional right to assemble, organize, and have their voices heard by their elected officials is exactly what we expect to see when American values are at stake. With regard to comparisons to President Obama's foreign policy decisions, as we've heard before, the president fundamentally disagrees with the notion of discriminating against individuals because of their faith or religion, unquote. And of course, there are a lot of people who pointed out, well, he didn't have a lot of trouble doing that when it came to contraception mandates or private business owners being forced to do various things. So, Jim, are you more upset about the hypocrisy or that he can't keep his mouth shut this quickly?
I'm just kind of marveling, Greg. So how do you think Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi feel right now? Right? It was kind of like, I thought we had Democrats in Washington that would be leading the charge against this. Maybe I'm a cynic. Maybe I interpret this and say, look, I planned on being on vacation for a while, but the Democrats in Washington are not loud enough, not clear enough, and simply, they're not me. So I felt the need to weigh in here and say that, much to your surprise, I oppose this. I'm going to feel the need to come out and tell you when I oppose something the new president does every day. That's kind of, you know, I the fact that the president's stepping in here is kind of a sense of like, hey, remember, I'm still here. Although technically, Mr. President, you're not here anymore. And there was once this, you know, politics used to stop at the water's edge. And we used to kind of have our ex-presidents head off into quiet retirement and playing golf and able to, you know, let the next guy take over and kind of recede from the political scene. Clearly, President Obama has no intention of doing this. I think you could argue that Bill Clinton definitely had a certain vocal role, particularly obviously through you know, the presence of Hillary. And President Jimmy Carter. So in retrospect, I guess the only thing about it, Greg, we have a tradition of Republican presidents right. not speaking out about the following presidents. But we really don't have that for Democrats. And I think that that kind of says a little bit about how they see the world, that your duty to denounce the opposition doesn't end. It only ends in death. Greg, and you know, even then, at some point, I'm sure in the afterlife, they expect you to keep issuing press releases.
Yes, and of course, the media yesterday is just overjoyed to hear from Barack Obama. Do you think if George W. Bush had come out against something that Obama was doing in the first week and a half?
Oh, it would have been, you know, it would have been betrayal. Why can't you just leave the stage? Take the hint, Mr. President. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you can imagine how that would have played.
You and I might not be looking to hire an acting attorney general. We're definitely not looking to hire Sally Yates, but I'm sure her resume is out there in a number of places. But the big question is today, are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can.
With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to more than 100 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast.
Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses. And right now, 3 Martini Lunch listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. For free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. Let's move on to our crazy martini now. And Jim, longtime listeners of the 3 Martini Lunch know that whenever we talk about the New England Patriots and Tom Brady, our commentary usually isn't all that positive towards them. You, of course, are a Jets fan, and I'm certainly no fan of the Patriots. Today, when it comes to Tom Brady, that will change. We're still not going to cheer for them on Sunday, of course, but this is insane. Nancy Armour is a sports columnist for USA Today. I've never heard of her before this, so I don't know her past, but you can kind of tell where she approaches things from by the way she writes this story. The column headline is Armour, : Tom Brady has some explaining to do on Donald Trump. Tom Brady no longer gets a pass on his friendship with Donald Trump, not after this weekend, when the country boiled over in rage and indignation at Trump's decision to turn America's back on refugees. Not after this season, when Colin Kaepernick was pilloried from coast to coast for trying to draw attention to the shortcomings of our country. And not when he's about to command the NFL's biggest stage. Skipping ahead, Trump's campaign was steeped in racism, bigotry, and misogyny, and he has doubled down on his hatred in his first week as president. It's left Americans across the country angry and frightened, fearful that the ideals that have made this country exceptional for more than 200 years are being abandoned. Brady might not agree with Trump's views or his policies, but in refusing to publicly disavow Trump's actions, Brady is giving tacit endorsement to both Trump and the chaos he created. So now it's up to Brady, apparently, to say exactly where he agrees and disagrees with Trump on everything. And she goes on to say, if Brady needs an example of how that's done, he can look at Kaepernick. From the day his national anthem protest became public in August, Kaepernick has been open, available, and consistent with his opinion. Later, she says, it would have been easy for Kaepernick to brush off questions or say he'd rather talk about football, as Brady has done. Well, that's probably because that's all Kaepernick cared about. He wasn't playing at the start of the season. And when he did, I'm sure he didn't want to talk about how he was playing. So, Jim, I don't know Nancy Armour. I don't know anything about her other than she's obviously a pretty big liberal. But she's not alone in these columnists. You've got Christine Brennan and Sally Jenkins and a lot of other people, a ton of people at ESPN, who are constantly injecting politics and culture, almost always from a liberal perspective, into sports. And it just gets so tedious and so tiresome. Tom Brady, I hope you are distracted by this for the sake of the game on Sunday. But in reality, you shouldn't be, because this is just dumb.
Yeah, I want to beat Brady, too, but not like this. Not like this. It's a good indicator of just how far the left has gone and how much they've fouled up to get you and I defending Tom Brady, right? You really got to put effort to get us, you know, to see us rushing to his defense like a pair of offensive linemen. So the observation here, right, that, you know, that one, Colin Kaepernick is the example that he should be, emulating, probably the most hated player in the league. Louise Mensch is a used to contribute. She used to write for Heat Street, and she's on Twitter a lot. She's part of the Rupert Murdoch journalistic conglomerate over there. And she made the argument that Colin Kaepernick did more to elect Donald Trump than almost any other private citizen. And I'm not sure you can say he's the person there, but I think that actually he was a it was kind of a key cultural tipping point over the course of the year. A lot of people who are NFL fans and who either feel good about the country or you know, don't like this idea of politicizing sports, just felt like it was in their face. And I remember thinking the argument that, you know, what is it like in that locker room in San Francisco, which, oh, by the way, was a terrible team last year. You got to wonder just how much the controversy helped, you know, did anything exacerbated the problems of the team. You know, when he sees all of his teammates standing, do you think his teammates are saying, oh, we think America is perfect? Did he think that his, you know, oh, my entire offensive linemen are totally cool with police brutality? They have no problem with shootings of young African-American men. You really think that's the case, Colin? Oh, by the way, keep in mind, Colin Kaepernick did not vote. So, I mean, in a way, we're kind of cheery about that. But yes, it was kind of an indicator of just how much just epitomizing this. And so your observation that we see more and more of this on the sports page lately. Jason Whitlock is a longtime sports columnist, and some days I agree with him, some days I don't. But he pointed out that there are a lot of people going into sports journalism who aren't that into sports, but they're really into, you know, leftist causes, right? You know, we can call it, stop calling it ESPN, start calling it ESJW, the Entertainment and Social Justice Warrior Network, because it really does turn into this constant haranguing and lecturing and stuff like that. Look, you know, it doesn't sound like, I have no idea what Tom Brady's views are on any political topic. I'm going to insert my usual snarky joke here, Greg, that, you know, for a lot of us, our wives and our mothers of our the mothers of our children are the single most important person in our life. In for Tom Brady, it's more of a demographic. not quite as bad as Antonio Cromartie, but in all things considered, it's none of our business, right? Tom Brady's job is to throw the football, and much to our chagrin, he's really good at it. And so there's a part of me that's like, look, if he's, you know, got a friendship with Trump, and he's fine. If he wants to talk about it, great. If he doesn't want to talk about it, fine. At a time when most of us want sports to be this this vacation from the troubles of life, this escape from everything else that's bad in the rest of the newspaper, let us enjoy our sports. To use, you know, the quote in my essay last year, I just want to enjoy the game. Here are sports columnists saying, no, you must have the social justice warrior agenda shoved in your face all the time, constantly, and everyone must be involved. And I think it's a toxic brew that will end up hurting the NFL. Even, you know, this way, if I'm Commissioner Roger Goodell, I'm like, no, I don't want any of this, because trust me, the league's got enough problems as is.
Well, that's certainly the case. And ESPN's ratings have been tanking as long as they've been going down this SJW path. And from what I'm hearing, they're only planning to double down as time goes on here, because, of course, they're part of the hysterical reaction to the Trump presidency. And nobody on the left seems to be ratcheting anything down. The intensity is as if it was still in the last week or two of the campaign. It's exhausting, it's stupid, and they can't separate those issues from the things that, like you said, should allow us at least a little bit of a respite from that. So you're welcome, Tom Brady.
Don't get used to it. Actually, you know what? If he really feels appreciative of our fully hearted defense of him, you know what would, you know what I think would be appropriate demonstration of gratitude, Greg?
What's that?
Retirement. You've done it all, Tom. Time to hang him up, you know.
Well, if he gets...
Take Belichick with you.
If he gets the fifth ring, he'll have something no other quarterback has. So maybe he would take you up on that. Jim, good to have you back. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.